This is Paul, and I'm going to talk about day three of the ARC event. As you can maybe tell, I am no longer in the hotel room. I'm in the home of some lovely people who have generously offered me a room that I can sleep in and now make a video in. And I'm in a different part of London still. Today, hopefully, I'll get to see a little bit of the British History Museum, which has some of the greatest artifacts from antiquity in it. And then tonight I'll be at the Inn in McGilchrist event with a number of friends. So that's on the docket for today. But I do want to talk about ARC Day 3 while it's still fresh in my mind. And then I also went to the Jordan Peterson event in 02, which is a sort of a, it's kind of a building constructed like a big top. You could Google it and see what it's like. It's interesting. It's a large crowd. So this is where he had done the event. The third and the fourth event was Sam Harris, and that time moderated by Douglas Murray. And that itself was an interesting event. I hadn't planned on going to that event, but a very generous friend insisted that I simply must go to it, because how on earth can I really do justice to this whole thing without seeing sort of the public face of ARC? And I'll talk about that when I talk about the event. So I've said a lot about, the first time I said a lot about sort of the Secondhand Lions. That was the first film, sort of this style of leadership. And I'll talk about that more as it sort of continues to unfold. The second day, I did the live stream with a number of people and asked and tried to answer a number of questions for people about what this event is like. The third day for me was a great day. I was able to do some really great networking and meet some people and get a little deeper into some things. And so, well, I'll have to make notes here because a few other things I didn't put on my notes that I want to talk about. So the day begins with Philippa Stroud sort of setting the table for the event, and then Jonathan Peugeot's speech. And as I said on the live stream after day two, I was a little nervous about the Jonathan Peugeot speech, because not that I don't trust Jonathan or anything, but these kinds of speeches are really tricky. And I won't name names on speakers that I think sort of stumbled. But it's when you have a big platform like that, a very consequential speech, it's especially for something that's sort of developing like ARC, it's sort of hard to know how to do and how it will go. And I thought Jonathan Peugeot gave the speech of his life. So the speech is already on YouTube and you can watch it. And here's a reality about speaking, which should give us all, especially me, who does a lot of commentary on YouTube on things. The speech in the moment, the speech in the context, is different from the speech on the screen. So day one and day two, I mostly hung out with, like I said last time, there are different elements that are there. So you definitely have American business elements, UK, you have business elements from across the world. You have organizations, NGOs, non-governmental organizations, they're called in the developing world, educational organizations, these kinds of things. They had people there. The press was there. You had political people there, political people from the US, from the UK, from Australia. So I'm friends with some of the people who were facilitating sort of the little press events that they would host there, because it seemed like the Australians paid the most attention to this event, which was quite interesting. There was a lot of focus from Australia. GB News, which is some people sort of equate it to sort of the Fox News of Great Britain, they had a big booth there, and so they were covering it fairly heavily, and my friends were sort of facilitating against some of these political things. And so as Rod said yesterday in the live stream, you know, they kind of shine a beam and, you know, get some visibility for this. Okay, so Jonathan Peugeot is on the stage, and the majority of people there who were speaking were sort of political, economic, not necessarily a few religious people in the first few days, but so this is Jonathan. And so I was doing a lot of hanging out with a lot of the arts people from Jonathan's element of the corner. As I said yesterday, if you understand, there are sort of three corners to this little corner. There's the symbolic world corner, there's the awakening from the meaning crisis corner, and then there's sort of the PVK corner. So the Peugeot corner, the Vivekhi corner, and the PVK corner. And the Peugeot corner was the most represented, partly because Jonathan is on the leadership team of this ARC project. And so I did a lot of hanging out with the sort of the Peugeotians in the Peugeot corner. And there was a fair amount of tension, and this is partly, again, due to who artists are. And they tend to be very high in openness, a little nonconformist, expressive. And so there were tensions in that group with respect to the whole event. Now, there are plenty of tensions with respect to the whole event anyway, because you've got political elements and strategy. You've got economic and energy elements and strategy, and many of the speakers were outspoken on certain points that not everyone would agree with, and they understood that. Philippa Stroud in the first speech made comment to that, you know, you heard a bunch of things, not all of you will agree, but again, the idea is we want to develop a coalition, an alternative to what seems to be the majority default agenda and policies of the world. And so many of the elements here were sort of counter-narrative, but counter-narrative along certain lines, sort of either conservative or libertarian, free market, again, classical liberal. So Jonathan Peugeot comes into this space. And again, the tensions here of sort of trying to reinstantiate a certain classical liberalism in this moment, which sort of harkens back to, let's say, beginning of the 20th century, lionish classical liberalism. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. I saw that Jacob had a tweet, but I didn't have time. I haven't had much time to be on social media, but is, you know, part of the tensions here is much of this conference was sort of defending classical liberalism against the wokish left. And that's been where a lot of these people have come out of. Many of these people here, sort of in the IDW path, were liberals or progressives, and wokeism hit, and suddenly they were displaced. And so looking for, okay, where can we find allies? And I remember Jordan Peterson being early on, being trying to characterize as all sorts of things, has this little video. Was he in a t-shirt or something? I mean, this is back in the early days when he's recording things. I hope Jordan doesn't take down all those videos. Well, they're all out there on the internet in different ways too, but they're really important to just see the narrative development of this whole Jordan Peterson thing. I was talking to a freelance writer who was working for Christian media here in the UK, and I told her, I said, you know, some smart writers out there should be collecting information to do the Jordan Peterson biography, because it is one hell of a story, and it is not done yet by any means. And actually talked about that, I was thinking about that at the O2 event, but what an incredible story. So here's Jordan explaining that he's not a Nazi, he hates Nazis, he's, you know, he's a classical liberal, and he walks through that in that little video. So this is all about classical liberalism. But again, the whole thing was sort of postured against the woke attack on classical liberalism. But there are other critiques of classical liberalism, some coming from the right, many of them coming from Christians. And the whole Christian nationalism debate in the United States is a debate about liberalism. That clip I play from Tim Keller is about liberalism. Patrick Deanan, Roman Catholics having a critique of liberalism, long-standing critique, because in some ways liberalism is deeply tied to Protestantism, and of course the Orthodox, and this very much will come through. So Jonathan Peugeot gets up there, and of course Jonathan is wearing a nice suit and a nice tie, and I thought he chose his clothing well. It's funny, you know, the focus on clothing, partly of course because Jordan is wearing these suits, and he sort of won me over on these suits when he first started showing up in them. I thought, what is he doing? But the more you watch him and the more you look at, okay, he's wearing this suit for this event, it sort of opened up another avenue of expression in the Jordan sphere. So Jonathan's wearing a very nice suit, a suit you very much, you know, it's tasteful, but it's got a little bit of flair for an artist. And Jonathan says there's an elephant in the room. And I just sort of think, uh-oh. On one hand, yes, this is going to be a speech that shakes things up. On the other hand, oh, Jonathan, don't blow up the project. So, high risk, high reward. So there's an elephant in the room. And I thought of, right in the moment, I thought of half a dozen elephants in that room, because there are half a dozen elephants in that room. So which elephant is he going to name? And he named the religious element. One of the themes of this trip for me has been the realization of, in some context in Europe, perhaps more northern Europe, I don't know the rest of Europe. Europe is such a diverse patchwork of different cultures and nations. But in the Netherlands and Germany and in the UK, one of my abiding observations from this trip is just how hard it is to be a crunchy Christian. People lose their jobs. They get canceled because I've heard these stories in the Netherlands, in Germany, and now in the UK, because they are Christians and they let people know that they are Christians. And there is a real reason. I mean, they have been living in a negative world longer, and their negative world is more negative than, by far, than the United States. And I think we American Christians need to be in prayer for our Northern European Christian brothers and sisters, because this is a challenge. And so Jonathan Peugeot asks, how many of you, I don't remember exactly, I'm not set up to process the video. How many of you are, you know, identify as Christians or religious or submit? And at least from where I was sitting, it was 85% of the hands go up. And for me, that was sort of I knew there were a fair number of religious people there, because some people, you know, obviously a few people walking around in collars, I'd meet some people out there who were active in political religious groups, et cetera, et cetera. And that sort of a light went on for me in terms of this project. I mean, this is not only a project of secondhand lions trying to revive something. This is a project of, in some ways, Christians reaching out to build a coalition to create a Christian alternative to what is increasingly a non-Christian and, in fact, sometimes anti-Christian wave of political ideology and application. And so, of course, it would have a sort of conservative bent, because even though for most of my life I've been a political progressive on the U.S. side of things, partially by virtue of my upbringing in a racial reconciliation church, which was deeply formed by the American Civil Rights Movement. But this is the awakening of Christians looking to build coalitions with others who have similar perspectives in a pluralistic society to apply Christianity to their context and to keep a Christian presence and voice and to be salt of the earth. And so the second speech in the morning given by someone of African descent, he still had an African, he's from Nigeria, but he was at an African church, a prominent preacher. I thought overall his message didn't go well, but it didn't go poorly by any means, but it didn't explode like Peugeot's, at least not to me. But you know, the salt and the light, and often there's the speech I hear in the moment, and then if I go back and watch a video of it, there's the speech I hear in the video. And you really have to, over time, the speeches mean more too, as speeches are living things in that sense. Okay, back to the Peugeot speech. So he takes the audacious move of asking all the Christians to raise their hand. Then he makes the even more audacious move of asking the atheists to raise their hand. And of course, they're just 10, 15%, which for Europe here, this is an inversion of what the Christians are living in. I didn't fully realize this until this trip. And it really moves me and my Christian friends in Europe. Not only after the German estuary was I deeply moved that I have to do more to support my Christian friends in Germany and the corner people in Europe, but also the Christians here in the UK. Even though for me it's just sort of shocking because there's an ostensible Christianity. I'm just going to steal this terminology from Oz Guinness. There's a civilizational Christianity here, but it's under attack, and it's very much under attack from younger people. And so it's interesting because many of the immigrants here, the Africans here, they're rebringing, I've read this for years, but now I get to see it, they're rebringing Christianity to these places. There's some irony here that the British Empire colonized the world with Christianity, and now the colonies are attempting to re-Christianize to England with the Christianity and the legacy of the Christianity that she planted around the world. It's a fascinating thing to think about. And then after Jonathan Peugeot made all the atheists raise their hand, then he said, and we've taken your names, which was just hilarious. And what he begins to lay out is in essence, the fact that there is the neutrality of secularism and modernity and materialism. I thought he walked through the anti-materialist, the Platonist diversion, Democritus versus Plato. It was a genius speech. It was a genius speech. And again, I'm thinking about it in terms of, As someone who speaks for a living, I thought, wow, just bang, 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 well laid out, well executed. And of course, in Jonathan's winsome, warm, friendly way, he just walked through this, and there were just moments of revelation in the speech. And I a personal annoyance of mine are standing ovations, especially when it's okay. They're doing a standing ovation in a political sense, okay, in a lying political sense. But after, you'd barely keep me in my seat after Jonathan's speech because I thought it was amazing. So he walks through Democritus versus Plato. He touches on hierarchy, and in many ways, even though he didn't name it directly, what he laid out is the foundational reasons why, going forward, liberalism has had its day, it's had its place, And there are elements of liberalism that we definitely want to maintain. But the reasons liberalism is going away is because this materialism is increasingly unsustainable. And the times are changing. And many of the atheist materialists, they don't know it yet. These things move very slowly generationally. But their day is over and it is ending. That doesn't mean it's going away anytime soon, because there are, again, there are elements of modernity and elements of liberalism that I think are achievements that should be kept. But the religious, philosophical, presuppositional foundation for them, actually, ironically, pushed in part by science, in part by society, that day is over. Now, what that opens up, however, is the more difficult challenge of once again having metaphysical conversations on the table that connect all the way up to practical application. Part of the blessing, part of the really sneaky Christian Jesus smuggling that secularity and even atheism created was the propagation of a Christian ethic, the propagation of the Imago Dei. And Mary Harrington always frames this as, you know, the beginning of transhumanism with the pill. And that's where the Imago Dei is really an important element in this, because basically what secularity did through the British Empire, through the French Empire, through the Dutch Empire, through the European empires, was spread around the world codes of Christianity into all of the other cultures and even all of the other religions. A big topic in Europe here is Islam tolerable? And basically the line between Islam that can be tolerated in the West and Islam that will become intolerant in and of itself and therefore intolerable is, to what degree has this code of Christianity that is in liberalism and the West, to what degree has that molded and changed Muslims so that in some ways, well, they're in a mosque and they're doing these things, but for the most part, they're acting like secular and even sort of Christian-like people out there. So these are the tensions that are at play. And so Jonathan's speech was not only, you might watch it on YouTube and you might say, yeah, he was especially clear. But speeches are given in rooms. And in that room, that speech was, it was like a beam of light went out in that room. And suddenly it was apocalyptic, it was revelatory. And suddenly, oh, ARC is, I don't even want to say it, because it sort of betrays, the smuggling aspect. Let's say the feminine energy of ARC is Christian. I'll say it that way. And one of the best things that I had a hand in the German estuary was my conversation with Andrea with the bangs on masculinity and femininity. So when that comes out, I expect that to get a little bit of interest, because I thought it went really, really well. But the feminine energy of ARC is Christian. I'll say it that way, because I think that sort of, if you understand how feminine energy works, I think that sort of frames it. I better write that down so I remember it. I might title it. So run, don't walk, to listen to Jonathan Peugeot's speech. It was amazing. I can't say enough about it, but I must go on. Couple other things. I was quite moved by the artist Makoto Fujimura, who had been trapped in a subway in 9/11, and it transformed the way he did his art. And I was quite moved by that. especially the mending of the broken pottery. And I thought, oh, that's so symbolic of the healing that needs to happen in the world. There was a lovely speech given by a composer. I really liked that talk. No standing ovation. I felt kind of bad. Maybe I should have started the slow clap and just stood myself. Maybe I could have prompted it for him. But I that was one of the lovelier talks of the conference too, I felt. I don't think got enough attention. And then, so there was a poet who was doing his poetry there. And the first poem I thought was, this didn't kind of fit. The second poem was better, and I liked it more. The third poem had me in tears. He told the story of his great-grandfather who lost his wife to the Spanish flu, who lost another wife to bearing their first child, lost his leg in the trenches of the First World War, eventually obviously had children because this guy was his great-grandson, but then had pictures and his art, became an artist, and the art was powerful. And I don't know if his stuff is going to be on YouTube, but if it is, especially catch the one about his great-grandfather. It was powerful. And so the morning session of day three in ARC really packed a punch. It really packed a punch. And then I went out for coffee, and then two of the people that I hung out most with in the corner were Rafe Kelly. I did a lot of good hanging out with Rafe Kelly, which I really enjoyed. Got to get up to see his place and his operation up in the Pacific Northwest with Rafe Kelly and with Nathan Jacobs. And so really, you know, built my relationship with Nathan Jacobs, strengthened it. And I anticipate doing post-ARC conference videos, both with Nathan and with Rafe. And really enjoyed my time with them, getting to know them at a deeper level. To me, that's really what this kind of conference is for. So then met, I hope to have her on the channel. She's the editor of Trigonometry, and she was so lovely. She came up and saw that we were talking about that session and sort of jumped in, and she's a comedian, and so it's very much enjoyed getting to know her, myself, and another friend who has been actually very, very helpful to me. I won't name him because he tends to, he likes to sort of stay under the radar. So I won't name him, but she talked to us, and so yeah, it was fun learning more about trigonometry and that world. As I don't know if I mentioned it in the Chris Williamson, KK, Constantine Kissin video at the end, Constantine talked about how he wants to turn trigonometry into a media platform. And he is a tremendously ambitious guy, and I won't share any of the things that she shared with me, but they have some exciting plans coming up, and I'm really excited for what they're going to develop that might prompt me to have to open up the wallet a little bit and you know, pay for a little behind the paywall stuff to see what's really going on there. So KK is a guy to watch. Also, last night in line for the O2, Chris Williamson was there, and he tapped me on the shoulder to say hi, and he was sort of an incognito. He was in a hoodie, and he is that dude. You know, I joke sometimes on the channel about the gym and stuff, but the dude has spent serious time in the gym. He is an impressive individual. I really like Chris, and it was just an absolute delight to meet him. And I went to the O2 with one of my friends who I won't mention because unless he wants to get mentioned at some point, but he sort of works behind the scenes in some things. And then also Glenn Scrivener and Nathan Jacobs. So the four of us had dinner together, and it was a wonderful evening. Anyway, back to the day. So I did get a chance to talk to Eric Weinstein, and I'm so glad that we had some time together. You know, Eric, as if you listen to Eric's stuff, he's deeply concerned about impending apocalypse. He's, I think, seriously committed to getting off this rock. He's a very intense guy. And in the end, I just, you know, he shared with me his, as he shared publicly, I'm not sharing anything here that I haven't heard him say publicly, but his, even though he himself is an atheist, he's deeply committed to Jewish religious practice. And I asked him questions about that. And then, you know, my heart warmed to him and I just wanted to pray for him. And so I asked if I could say a prayer with him, and he said he would like that. And so I don't always, in the United States, whenever I, even with people I know who are atheists, who I will often ask if they would welcome a prayer. And if they say no, I don't, of course. But if they say yes, those are some of the most precious moments for me. And so I just prayed as a relatively simple prayer of blessing for him and his family and his work and his cares. And so he expressed real gratitude for that. So it wound up being a lovely moment with Eric, which I very much appreciated him giving me the time. You know, a place like this is, it's an interesting group. Yes, 1,500 hand-picked, invited people in the room, but there's lots of status and there's all that stuff going on. So, and thank you to those of you who watch this video. And people would sometimes message me and say, oh, I watch your stuff and I thank you for it. And I would say, you know, well, find me and interrupt me and at least shake my hand so I can see your face and maybe have a little snippet of a conversation and hear a little bit about your life and hear a little bit about what you're doing. And a number of people did stop me and interrupt me, and it was surprising and delightful, and I loved it. So I skipped, you know, a couple of the sessions the rest of that day, just again out sort of doing that kind of thing, networking, getting to know people, strengthening relationships, et cetera, et cetera. And that was lovely. And then I was, you know, I definitely didn't want to miss the last session of the day, which was sort of the wrap up, which I knew would be, which was Philippa Stroud and Jordan Peterson again. And because, you know, beginnings and endings are important. And so this was the ending. And again, I'm, you know, what Jonathan, the revelation that Jonathan Peugeot achieved was really helpful for me again, and once again, sort of reframing the conference. Jordan, I thought, gave a good talk. Now, there's something here that John Vindonk already texted me on, because if you watch the video, and my host this morning told me, Betty, says, you watch the video, and then when I tell you what happens, you'll be, you might be a little surprised, as I was frankly shocked. But here we go. So, I thought Jordan gave a good talk. You know, typical Jordan, he's got some ideas of what he wants to say. He comes on stage, and the talk was in some ways similar to the talk that he gave at O2. And I thought there were some really nice elements in that talk that were new and fresh. And so I enjoyed it. And then he ends the talk by introducing, and then according to my host here, then the video ends. And so last night I get this feverish text from John Vindonk, and I get all kinds of texts from John Vindonk. Who spoke after JP and where can I find that? And I'm thinking, which talk? I was thinking the talks earlier, but given what my host said, I now know that, John, so if you're watching this, I'm going to explain what happened. And I think there's probably thousands, if not tens and hundreds of thousands of people that wonder what happened after that. And there's a reason it's not on YouTube. And the reason has to do with what any YouTuber knows as copyright. So John, I'll just read, sorry, John, I'm going to read your text to me because it's John Van Donk. And John, people sometimes confuse John Van Donk with kind of this, you know, people confuse me with Santa Claus, and people confuse John Van Donk with kind of this jovial, happy, older guy. But John's a very sharp guy, and he sort of masks it with his joviality and his Dutch humor and all of that. But he's a very sharp guy, and he pays attention. So John writes this to me. So let me get this straight. That's typical Dutch frankness. You are one of 1,500 people handpicked as demonstrated your ability and willingness to help tilt the world towards heaven and away from hell. He listens to Jordan. I'm genuinely honored to know you. The challenge now is for the church, both locally and globally, to rise to the challenge Jordan Peterson placed before the ARC audience. And then he kind of backs off a little people and thinks, Paul, I hope I didn't offend you. Of course, John, you're not going to offend me, John. But then he goes into this more. But so Jordan sort of abruptly ends the talk, and apparently that's where the video closes. And then they had some musicians and some vocalists, and they sing the song from the musical Les Miserables about the French Revolution. And I'm just stunned. They had another vocal performance from Hamilton, the American Revolution. And that was, all right, Hamilton's popular, yada, 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 yada. But then this song about the French Revolution, I'm thinking, I understand you want ARC to have impact. And again, depending on this then pulls out all of these tensions with respect to liberalism. Abraham Kuyper, some of you will recognize his name, Abraham Kuyper in the Netherlands, this Dutch polymath, theologian, newspaper man, prime minister of the Netherlands, developed polarization, very much an attempt to address pluralism in the world. Founded the Anti-Revolutionary Party, because for many, many, I think, very much in this space, of which I think in many ways ARC is an heir of. ARC, the difficulty with Kuyperianism in America is that there are many different strands, and they're sort of constantly warring because of the tensions within Abraham Kuyper. But this, Kuyper established the Anti-Revolutionary Party because many in the Netherlands saw the French Revolution as going exactly the wrong direction. And especially in a country like France, a Roman Catholic country, it's exactly the wrong direction. And so one of the things that I had said a number of times during the conference is there's the musical selections for the conference I often found to sort of be at odds with what I would take to be what the conference is sort of historically the tradition that it is following into, because it's definitely within a history. But then the musical selections are like, Now, maybe this is because I'm a Christian minister of a small church, and when we put together in Protestant churches, you know, we don't have this vast liturgy that we just continue to work through. Every service is, in a sense, a liturgy that's to a degree received, but also put together because you do song selection. And so when you're selecting music for a Protestant event, and this is a very Protestant event, it's talky, 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 some music. When you're selecting music, hymns, and spiritual songs for a Protestant event, you choose very carefully because you want the music to contribute because music is so powerful. And now these songs were professionally done by just top musicians and vocalists. The musical quality was absolutely outstanding, but the selection was strange. I still can't mind. So I was sitting next to Nathan Jacobs, and we look at each other like, what is this? What is this? Do they not sort of, are they not fully understanding sort of how this is working through, let's say, in the multi-generational liturgy of the strand of Christian application they are attempting to resurrect? It took me totally by surprise. I thought they should have sang For All the Saints. This great hymn, a very British hymn, and you know, that might be too much because I don't understand the sensitivities of, you know, what they're trying to do with this is trying to recapture some of the political, economic instantiation, the in some ways smuggling, but yet for most deeply self-conscious Christian civilization they are trying to resurrect, while trying to not trigger, and this is part of the reason why the transition from lions to foxes happened, you'll have to see my first video on this, to not trigger some of the negative legacy of colonialism. And so revolution tends to be this way of anti-colonialism. But how to work through those tensions? But the American and the French revolutions? So at 02, Jordan basically reprised some of what he talked about in the morning. And Jonathan hit among the normal notes. Lomberg played it safe for the most part. Maybe that's these Europeans who are in a very disciplined way secular, a Scandinavian, you know, he didn't want to get personal. He was going to stick to the script that he did, and okay, that's fine. In some ways, Douglas Murray stole the show. It's hard not to have Douglas Murray steal a show in a number of ways. So articulate, so talented, his timing, also the only Englishman on the stage, knew his audience. Wow, just delivered. But then there's, and you know, so I'm making these videos. I know these videos get seen. I one of the revelations for me in this conference was, it's not just people in their mom's basements who are watching these videos. And conference organizers like this, they are, and Jordan was very clear at the O2 event. I was glad I did, even though I was tired and the seats are uncomfortable and they're small and I'm big. But I was glad I went, and I appreciate the gift that someone gave me. And it's not that I could never have afforded it. It just wasn't a priority. And he quite wisely, no, this should be your priority. So that's part of the reason. That's part of what the role that this man plays. And there are others like him in this corner who are good colonizers of me. But Jordan, with the O2 element of ARC, very much wanted to explain ARC. And say, no, this is for us. And Jordan hit, I think, exactly the right note there too, when this is something that he said often, what we're doing at ARC will not be coercive. And so again, there you see the part of the problem with the neo move is that we've already had neoliberal. So is this neo-neoliberalism? I don't know. The language descends, okay, and then it is known. So this will not be coercive. This is designed to woo. This is designed to convince. This is designed to persuade that this is the better way forward. That in fact there can be prosperity. There can be prosperity and diversity, that there can be a unified culture with a degree of diversity. That so in a sense, it's a lion-fox hybrid. And this is vitally important, obviously, because of the Christians, because again, 200 years ago, it was sort of Protestant Christian Europe that was colonizing the world. The Spanish colonization in the Americas didn't go so well. Roman Catholic colonization had its issues too. I'm not saying it's always as universally bad as in Latin America, but colonization by the, let's say, the Roman instantiation, this is all tricky history. But in some ways, Christianity is growing in the rest of the world, while it's still weak and feeble and maybe in decline in America, we'll see. But Christianity is growing in the rest of the world, and those Christians are not shy. They are bold, and they believe, and they are coming to Europe. Yes, there are Muslims coming to Europe, but there are also Christians coming to Europe. And those Christians know who they are, and they have confidence. And I think in some ways, this ARC conference is an expression of that Christian confidence. But again, this is Christian confidence. And so it is a confidence of love, and it is a confidence of the power of love to conquer. Love, not arms. Love, not coercion. So Jordan hit that note strongly at the O2 presentation, and I thought that was vital. I don't think they needed to hit that note in the 1500 in the ARC conference, because I think for the most part it was assumed, given the revelation that Jonathan Peugeot instantiated in the raising of hands. These are Christians. They are here to love, and they are here to woo with love. And I know that's complicated for some of my Jewish audience, one person in particular. I won't name you right now, Jacob. But this is a tension in the Christian nationalism debate. And so then one of the other interesting things from the O2 conference was this question of pluralism arises, which, so you've got Jordan Peterson, the faith that he has on stage. Jonathan Peugeot, obviously a Christian. Lomberg, very seemingly a secular atheist. And where Ben Shapiro was a special guest that came on. But Douglas Murray, who of course is sort of this, we still don't have a name for these closeted European Christians. Douglas Murray came out of one closet and is in another, I think, in some ways, and wanting, trying, you know, even. So again, I mentioned I did the thing with Peter Boghossian. I had a wonderful time with him. You know, I've started this strange thing on the internet where I comment on people's things, and I tell you what I think. I try to be generous, I try to be civil, but I do try to tell you what I think in all honesty. But that does annoy people who make the content that I comment on sometimes. But again, all of them were, you know, received me warmly, and again, I'm glad I had that conversation with Eric. I'd love to, and again, to do it in person. I mean, some of you have a sense of who I am through the camera, but I, you know, when I'm with people in person, I very much want to express Christian love and warmth. And I'm not giving up on Winsome or the Word, sorry. I can be direct, and some of you know that too, but So anyway, so for me, I had a lot of misgivings about this conference. I honestly don't know if I would have made the trip if I hadn't already been in Germany. But now, at this point, I'm super glad I went. And if invited to come again, I will come and support in any way I can. They announced that the next conference will be February 2025. A real interesting question for me is, will it be in Europe or North America? February, maybe they'll have it in Miami. Oh, Miami would be. Miami is not, Miami is the capital of Caribbean, it really is. So Miami is a very interesting place. And of course, Daily Wire's in Miami. Jordan Peterson has a home in Miami. Is Michaela living in Miami? I think so. So Miami's a very interesting place. And if you're a climate change skeptic, Miami's a good place to buy property because a lot of the hardcore climate change people are, you know, it's going to be underwater. So, the last day of ARC sort of won me over. I understand it better. And, want to be part of the conversation. So, yeah, that's how I feel. Let's see, anything else that I wanted to bring up? Maybe that's a good time to end it. Oh, Peugeot's comments about pluralism. Those were really interesting. They were on O2. Brought up the emperor, the king. And of course it makes perfect sense. Constantinople. And it fits in with the, because in some ways what WASPy leadership did in the United States and perhaps to a degree the Church of England in the UK, and so hence also Canada and Australia to a degree through the king, was, you know, there is a hierarchy. And at least in the United States, you know, if you were certain kinds of Protestants, if you're Episcopalian, you know, go to the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. The services there are Episcopalian. If you're Episcopalian, you're at the top of the hierarchy. If you're Presbyterian, you're close. If you're Methodist, okay. Baptist, now we're getting down there. And Pentecostal, you're at the bottom. And of course, Catholics, Jews, African Americans, Muslims certainly need not apply. And this is what, you know, so Jacob pushes back, because Jacob always wants me to be more of a lion. But the difficult thing with the old lion tradition is that there would be no place for Jews. There would be no place for Catholics. So then, Kale, Jacob, Hezi, I mean, how many of you Orthodox weren't even on the map? Southern Europeans, Eastern Europeans, you know, it was only after we were finished hating the Irish and the Catholics that we started hating the Catholic Italians and Poles and the Russians. So, and the Jews. So, be a little careful about how much you want to go back to the days of WASPy lions ruling the realm. There's a reason the establishment switched into Fox mode. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, go back and see the first video I made of ARC Day 1. And there are links there to Eric. Forget his last name. His Substack. There are links in that one. So that was the one with the lion. And again, but these are Christians, and Christians, many of these Christians are coming from the colonies, and America was a colony. And so, in some ways, it's some of the difference between, let's say, British colonialism and American colonialism, No, America was anti-colonial and had been anti-colonial for much of its history. So then in the aftermath of the Spanish-American War, when it finds itself in possession of, well, Puerto Rico, that's a different history, but the Philippines, you know, that America's experiment in colonialism in the Philippines is not a very happy one. And so we're still working through these things, and they get worked because they're broad and huge, these spirits, and we work through them slowly, and we're doing it. So yeah, very glad I went. And I know some with a critique of liberalism will, I don't want to have anything to do with that. Oh, okay, that's fine. But the winsome man that I am think the issues are real. The work is important. And it's good. It's good. It's good. So another little thing that came out in the O2, it became clear to me, you know, right away when I saw the Jordan Peterson thing happening, I thought, I'm going to have to do something with institutions. Well, here it is. And now Jordan's got his fingers in the pie of a lot of institutions. There's Peterson Academy. He's working in so many areas. He's working on, you know, trying to renew the university, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of saving the world, this is Jordan's project. And it is incredibly interesting to me that his principal partners in this are evangelical English nobility. Again, one of my friends here noted that Philippa Stroud was canceled for making a comment that was dug up years before. She was canceled already years ago for making a comment she had made even years before that, that wasn't sort of LGBT copacetic. And this is back in the day when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were talking about civil unions, but someone decided to reach back and cancel her because of something that she had written, a minor comment in a blog post expressing basically her fairly standard Christian evangelical beliefs. Now, evangelical is a complex word here in Europe because it doesn't exactly mean what it means in America. I know this because I've been reading commentaries from English evangelical scholars for a very long time, and some American biblical scholars get a little uncomfortable by some of these English evangelical scholars. So anyway. And so Jordan's partner in this are a evangelical Christian minister and his wife, who, in the words of one of my friends, if she hadn't been canceled, she might just be a backbencher, an MP backbencher. But I see much in the providence of God, of the things that for us we receive as unwelcome, and that in time God comes and turns to good. And that is the story of the cross. That is the story of the world. I had a lovely conversation with some people at ARC, where they asked me about technology and some of this doomsday apocalypticism. And I said, the story of the gospel is that God takes what seems to be an absolute tragedy, such as the crucifixion of their Messiah, and turns it into the key redemptive moment. So so what was all of this ARC thing? They want to build a coalition and win people over. Well, guess what? Mission accomplished. Would I have done it all the same way? No. Would I have picked those songs? No. They were beautiful, stirring, powerful music, but I pay attention. You know, you've got a group of artists there that it's not just whether it was impressive in the moment, but the French Revolution, really? Although, okay, French Revolution through Victor Hugo? Okay, better. So, you know, it's complicated, but Peterson also often plays Bolero at his things. And again, just given Bolero? So Peterson's an interesting dude. But yeah. So maybe the feminine energy of Christian Ark won me over. Maybe that's the title. So that's it. I hope to make good use of my time in London and see some sights. They tell me the weather we have now is the weather of London. Overcast, drizzly, most months out of the year, and chilly. I feel for you people. I love California. It's gorgeous. So anyway, this is my wrap-up video, except that I will be talking about this with, Lord willing, with Nathan and with Rafe, and probably with Jonathan. Jonathan pulled me aside and said, "We haven't done a video for a while." And I thought, "Well, I'm always ready to talk to Jonathan." And then I was saying, what would we talk about? No, we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about ARC. And now he's got to be a little careful because he's on the leadership board. But it impressed me that, and this doesn't surprise me, given Jordan, because I've said all kinds of things about Jordan over the last 6 years. And he's never once sort of, taken offense. And many of the others that I've said things about have not taken offense, maybe a little slower than Jordan to encourage me. But they seem, and again, this is so complete, in my opinion, completely Christian. They're non-defensive. They're completely open. They want to include. They want to marshal. They want to gather. They want to build a movement that will. My take isn't that they're just going to sort of swallow the wokies. I think the wokies are going to come apart, and they're going to come apart, and then this coalition will be ready to say, "Okay, let's try another way. Let's try and capture some of what produced a lot of good fruit. There was some bitter fruit too, but produced a lot of good fruit. Let's take away some of the elements of it. Let's work through some of the hard pieces, and then let's build a new, can there be another golden age? Why not go for it? Why not try?" But again, this is non-coercive. We're not here to put your arm behind your back and to, Jonathan Peugeot named, another elephant in the room that he named was COVID. It was brilliant. It was amazing. So terrific. Yeah, day three won me over. So yeah, I'll do a Freddie, David, Philippa, Jordan, Jonathan. Yeah, it got me. Good job, colonization. All right, folks, leave a message. The videos are out there fast. So, I've got another week of estuary, and so, yep. Yeah.